Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Danny McCarthy. In this podcast, Sue Nemitz, CEO and founder of the Nemitz Group and Korval, and Carrie Brady, CEO and president of Ocutera Therapeutics, sit down to discuss commercialization and what biotech CEOs need to know. When to think about your commercialization strategy, what keeps CEOs up at night, and how to allocate the proper resources and personnel. Welcome, Carrie and Sue, to Pharma Talk Radio.
Great. It's lovely to be here.
Thanks. Love to be here as well. Nice to see you, Carrie and Danny.
I'm going to start with Sue and then Carrie, I'll pivot to you. But from your experience, Sue, working with so many different CEOs across many different companies, what does the typical biotech CEO thought process or consideration around commercialization?
So I don't want to answer with the it depends, but I'm going to start with the it depends and then go to, I think it's generally maybe four different types of CEOs or approaches. I think the savvy ones, which Carrie certainly is, are CEOs who understand that commercialization is a mindset and that fundamentally what they're doing in all the research and development and building their companies is to get novel therapies to patients. And those CEOs think about it really early and make sure that the right inputs are in all the plans. I think the second type or another type don't think about it until the very end. And they think commercialization is commercial. It's sales and marketing. We're too early. We're not going to look at that. Another type may not think about it until their board or their investors say, hey, what's the plan or what's the market opportunity here, which is going to drive financing. And then fourth, and sadly, often some just don't think about it at all.
So Carrie, can you give a sense of, from your perspective, what that looks like for you?
Yeah, I agree with the way Sue has characterized the CEOs, because obviously there's a spectrum of us. I'm at one end of the spectrum, you may say. But if you take a step back and say, well, where were these companies coming from? I think that is also a way to look at them. So if you have someone who's a serial CEO and has gone through this before, okay, they understand a lot of things and are moving forward. When you've got something really exciting, newly emerging science, that is on the way to be turned into an important treatment, that's a different group of CEOs as well, who perhaps do not yet have a commercialization mindset. And so the importance of understanding where you're headed, why you're headed, and what you're going to build, and having people understand that even very early on is really, really important. I think an interesting thing is the value that experienced, savvy investors for your new company can also bring to the table. You're talking with any of the usual suspect VCs around the town in Boston. And even at a very early stage, when you've got a product lead identified or even going into your phase one, they're going to be asking you what we call commercial questions. So you need to understand where you're building to and how you're going to build it.
Why wouldn't commercialization be a priority from the very beginning? What else would be the competing priority that means that they're not thinking about the long haul of A to B to C and my goal is X?
Yeah, I think the majority of resources being spent on clinical development, it is so expensive. And if you're a resource constrained biotech CEO, you're going to say, well, look, once we have great proof of concept, data from a clinical trial, then we can start thinking about commercial. But we have to get that so that we can go forward. We don't want to waste money on doing market surveys and things. We don't need to do that. We spoke to five KOLs and they said, oh, it is amazing. You get it approved. And that market research is enough for me at this stage. However, the approach that they should be taking is, if you look at it, success in our business used to be primarily regulatory approval. Right. Regulatory approval is necessary, but not sufficient for building value. It's the reimbursement. That's the next key. And that's where you're going to be also having to build much earlier on your information to support the value of your program. It's like a layer. You've got the core, which is the regulatory and clinical. You've got to build value around that. And so you have a more valuable product that can get to patients.
I completely agree with what Carrie's saying. And I think that the point she made about knowing where you're going, Well, that's really the definition of strategy, right? And so if a CEO is heads down on the R&D and clinical data, or maybe heads down on the financing of the company, which we know is a big part of what pre-commercial companies do, then they may not be thinking strategically about where they're going. And yet, a lot of the issues that a commercialization plan will identify will ensure that they're actually going to be in a positive place. And whether the label that they get is not reimbursable, as Carrie alluded to, or whether they don't part the right sort of endpoints into the clinical trial, or whether they don't have the stakeholder communication understood, all of those factors are really going to have them end up in a different place, maybe than would be ultimately preferred by them and their stakeholders.
And that raises a good point in that there's a difference between, I would say, biotech CEOs in rare disease drug development companies and those who are in broadly large indications with that. You know, because of the nature of rare disease, there's a lot more interaction with what you would call commercialization thinking earlier in the process with that. And so for them, also, many of the rare disease companies do launch their own products successfully. Those who are in larger disease indications, there are groups who think, well, fairy godmother, someone's going to acquire us or the product once we have brilliant phase two data. Interestingly, if you look at statistics, there's more unpartnered phase three products out there than there has ever been. And so looking at the supply and the demand for partnering, things, more companies are going to have to be prepared to launch their own product. We can't be relying on a single strategy of getting acquired commercialization or partnering commercialization. All of the things that you should be doing, you should still operate as if you will have to launch this yourself. And that adds value to where you are, fortunate enough to be partnered or acquired by a company. How do you convince them in your deal negotiations of the true value of the product? Will have had data from the commercialization planning work that you have done to help move that along. It also ensures that when the product is brought in-house, they don't have to start all over again for the program. And I think a third point there is interesting, that in deal negotiations, a lot of companies, a biotech company might say, well, look, I'll partner my firstborn, but I want to have control over my second. And that part of working with the big pharma on your first product, you gain skills. And often you may want to have a co-promotion or a co-development or co-commercialization. So there's other reasons to make sure that you have done the work, you know, for a deal to be going forward.
I think it's that disadvantage. You don't want to have that disadvantage in a negotiation like that you aren't a step ahead or at least tracking with this bigger partner who has a lot more resources. So I agree with what you're saying, Carrie, and I think we can speak to how to do that without bulking up and adding a lot of headcount that's going to be focused on a potential scenario rather than doing the priorities at hand today.
Is there a point when you've worked with biotechs where they can think, okay, if we get to this benchmark, we know that we're in a good enough position that I need to be start thinking about this. What is that inflection point?
Well, really, it's as soon as you have enough insight to say you have a drug. That's very early. That could be phase one, where you start to think about that. And certainly thinking about or understanding where you are, phase one, two-ish, phase two, three-ish, and then in the final stages before launch, what you do would be different. And so, again, drawing on Carrie's experience, she and her teams have always been thinking about it, and really this gets back to the value of a product like Korvel, building the plan and then stage gating what you do with the plan based on all the other priorities in the company. So if you're in a phase one, two company, the priorities in commercialization would be making sure you have a market assessment where you understand what the opportunity is. That's going to help you with your investors. That's going to help you with your internal discussions. Making sure you've done a competitive assessment and you have competitive intelligence. That's going to make sure that not only the products that are on the market today, but the products that are in other people's pipelines, because those changes in the market are going to change the standard of care, which is going to change what value your product has when you finally get to the market, which could be 3, 4, 5, 6 years from when you're first having that conversation. And so the broader thinking is really early, and then the idea of what do you do along the way, because obviously in phase 2, you're doing a lot more hands-on, defining a scientific platform, ensuring you have indication prioritization understood, et cetera. So simply stated, early, but high level, and then more and more granular and more specific as you get closer to market. Would you agree with that, Carrie?
I do. And I think the starting point is something as straightforward and simple, but disciplined, as a target product profile. Mm-hmm. Getting down on paper what you want this product to be and to do. It surfaces questions for you with your clinical development plan, for example, with that. Other things that will come out, just having that as a common way also for people across the company to get alignment on what it is you're trying to build. The plans for, a couple of $100 million clinical trial, you spend some time if you're spending that on building a building. Well, yeah, let's get our TPP in place. And then you can use that TPP for a number of different things. And you're soon here, you've got great experience with helping people do that, but also they understand the importance of having that TPP in place.
So from both of your perspectives, what are the key considerations? How do you build up the commercial team, the medical affairs team? What kind of conversations with regulators you should be having about real-world evidence?
As we were talking about before, about knowing where you're headed, both Carrie and I have prioritized that strategic understanding. Your question about how do you build a roadmap before you have the internal capabilities is a very important one. And often companies will hire an outside consultant to do that work, which is a way. And the challenge with that way is whatever point in time that person finishes that work, that is the point in time that you have. And so a key part about the vision for building a platform like CorVal was to be able to build that roadmap that could be 3 to 5 years, which lays out all the strategic objectives and the activities, but also based on your priorities as a company, identifies the build of the team. So when to bring in medical affairs early, when to do a market assessment strategy, and then when to begin to think about your commercial resources really should be in a roadmap. And of course, we believe using technology to make that an easier step that is more updatable. And so I think the how is those ways, and then the what really leads to some of what Carrie has had experience with, including sort of when to bring in which resources.
With regards to sort of medical affairs, now, I think that would probably be one of your first commercial type hires. And the reason being is when you're doing your clinical trial, you're actually marketing, particularly in the larger industry, because you're competing against other products that are going to be in that clinical trial. So the sites and the investigators, why would they put a patient that has criteria that could go into several different trials? Why would they want to work with you on your trial? And to continue with that, and your messaging and positioning. So I think it's crucial during your clinical development to have a medical affairs component in that as a hire. I'm not saying that's all you do. I don't think that your first commercial type hire should be a chief commercial officer. That's, it would be great if you could find one and you could afford one. But if you can't afford a full-time one, there is an emergence now of this fractional chief commercial officers that are out there. And that is valuable because they're embedded with your team along the way. And then there's great individual consultants that you can have as well. But someone has to retain that internal memory and all that.
What are the common or frequent learning opportunities, misconceptions, hurdles that CEOs of new or startup biotechs should be thinking about as they go onto this journey of towards commercialization?
I think that the fear about reimbursement, as was already alluded to, comes up a lot. And the challenge with doing too much work too early on that issue, or the wrong kind of work, is that it's going to become dated. I mean, we need only look at the headlines and know that that environment's going to be changing. And so having a clarity around that strategy comes up often. Certainly, the competitive environment that I alluded to before is a key part, both for the clinical trials that Carrie referenced and sort of beginning to get your story. I think that the how to allocate resources to what is a key question that comes up, even in the CEOs that know they should be doing something. And then the fear is they're going to overbuild or overanalyze a something. And we often advise people, be careful about the outside expertise you bring in, the consultant expertise. It's critical, and we have amazing resources in our industry to help. But sometimes that may be overbuilt for what you need. If you're a phase one, two company, you may not need a full field force strategy when where you're going to put reps. You need a benchmark number. And so I think, like in anything that's very big and complex, it's guidance. And having that guidance and confidence that you're getting good advice, I think, seems to be a really important thing that comes up for these CEOs.
Carrie, from your perspective, what do you think keeps CEOs up at night about commercialization?
Yeah, I think what keeps CEOs up at night in general, overall, it's always about having the right resources to execute on your plan and having enough to do it. And so when you're thinking about commercialization, is the question, how much should I spend and what should I spend it on? What more must I do now? And what can I put off until later safely with that? You know, in a small company, you can't apply the sort of general, fully populated big pharma playbook of what they would do. You've got to figure out what they are. And so the difficulty is figuring that out and having a trusted advisor. You know, if you're asking a consultant about something and they're going to get paid by the hour for the project to do it, well, you're going to get generally a larger, more expensive project. And so having a source that you can trust to help you make those decisions is really crucial for you. I think as you're moving along in the company too, particularly as you're coming up to your proof of concept and then thinking now the judging you need to do is, how much do I spend now, assuming that I've had a great plan and I've got it all going forward? When do I pull the trigger on some significant investment in commercialization? And usually around about that time as a CEO, you're running, let me say, two-pronged strategy, it's usually three-pronged strategy, is and the basis of it is the building the credible belief amongst whether it is potential investors for your next venture round or in your negotiations with a potential partner, a credible belief that you could go ahead without with that. And so what signals do you need to be giving out to them that you are and can do this? And that, you know, that's usually getting a full-time chief commercial officer on board. Normally you get them on board before you get the clinical results. That's a really tough decision.
Sue, can you walk us through how you're helping companies understand at the size that they're at the place that they're at, what their needs around commercialization might be at that point?
What we talk about a lot in CorVal is the strategic mapping versus the implementation, and then the budgeting and resourcing. And so the really cool thing about the way CorVal has been built is there's a querying. Sometimes I allude to something like TurboTax. Have you moved? Have you changed jobs? Do you have a family? You know, what age are you? You answer those questions and you're guided through the tax process. Well, at a very simple level, that's what we do with CorVal as well. And so our team sits with the biopharma company and really gets that understanding of, is this a big prevalent disease? Is this a more common disease? Or is it a pretty unique disease that has a lot of complexity to it, either rare oncology or some of the other specialty areas? And so that insight goes to the answers that that company provides. Are they going to get breakthrough designation? Are they going to have sub-Q? Are they going to have oral? All of that really forms the basis of their strategic plan. That then builds a map that's really aligned with their goals. And our team obviously sits with them to get that done. And the cool thing is it's really only in a few hours. Then you have this very huge, complex plan in place. Then when you change your milestones, because things move more quickly, or are delayed, or get more money, or you don't have enough money, you can just, as technology is defined, you can make some slight changes and it just goes through the entire plan. So the vision has really been to elevate commercialization and allow CEOs like Carrie to really put their brain power on the really complex problems that are impeding their path to patients, as opposed to moving little buttons on a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint deck.
Yeah, and I would add to that too, an additional value is the ability to actually do scenario analyses. You've got your roadmap based on certain assumptions or certain resources, limitations. You can then do scenario analysis. What if this were to happen? What could I do? And what would I need in terms of resources to be able to do that? Also, when you're doing your strategic assessment regularly, updating that and it builds through to you and that. So that's extremely valuable to have that ability there with the memory and the manipulation of it. And the other thing I found very helpful is it also prompts you to think about things you never really needed to think about, because there are some things, particularly as you're getting closer to commercialization, that have a gating factor. And they're not always big things. It's like, oh, we didn't know that needed to be done. Oh, good, good. Now we know we need to build it. So that's another advantage that really helps, particularly the earlier stage companies.
We committed really to the industry when we started CorVel to provide education throughout the platform. And so what Carrie's alluding to also is not only missing something or being prompted, it's the definition of all of these terms. And many people who've never done it before may not know what PDUFA is, or may not know what HEOR is, or may not know some of those terms, what these roles actually do. And so all of that is defined. And for some teams, that's a huge advantage and will help get to some level of standardization.
As we're wrapping up, what would you say, Carrie, from your perspective, is the most important or impactful first step that a CEO of a biotech can take? And Sue, from your vantage point, having worked with multiple CEOs, what have you found to be the most impactful step that you encourage any new partner to focus on and prioritize first?
Yeah, well, the first step is sketching out your commercialization strategy. Now, you can do that alone, ballpark, just at least get some ideas on the table. But ideally, with a partner, you can then have something to discuss with a consultant or group or use CorVel or something to help build that out. But as I said earlier, getting the target product profile down on paper, simple to start, and that is a key thing to be doing as well. So they're the two things.
And I agree with Carrie. And of course, coming from my orientation, I would further support the build the plan, because once you have the plan, and this is where CorVel plays a very important role, you can see what the priority should be and then make the decision of how deep to go on that priority. And target product profile is absolutely one of the items within CorVel that you're prompted to consider at that sort of end of phase one timeframe. And so knowing that plan and then knowing your own strategy will allow you to then make the right decisions along the way. And it can be overwhelming when a lot of things keep coming at you, where when you have a strategic plan, you know what you're not going to do, you know what you are going to do, and you can help become the leader that you know you need to be as a CEO. So it probably applies to multiple different areas of leading a biopharma company, but certainly in commercialization, it does as well.
I think another key thing that people should pay more attention to is actually getting someone on your board who has commercialization expertise and experience with that. That's way before you need to hire somebody and bring somebody in-house and things like that. Having that voice at the board and the strategic level and the strategic discussion is crucial. And again, I don't see a lot of that out there. I think they might think, oh, as we're getting closer to launch or something, yes, we'll get somebody on our board with commercial expertise and experience. Get them on earlier if you can. They're a great resource for you.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that someone who's come from both the bigger pharma perspective, hopefully knowing what good looks like, and coming from the pre-commercial perspective, knowing how to calibrate what you should do when. And the final thing I will say about that is the caution of the enemy of the anecdote. So the person that says, I have a friend, or we should be doing this. I literally remember earlier in my career where someone sat next to someone on a plane, and it was something about infusion times, and that prompted a whole big effort in the company. And that would be an anecdote that hopefully a plan would have already allowed the CEO to say, that isn't for us right now, or we're not really following that. So.
Thank you so much, Sue and Carrie, for taking the time to walk through what CEOs of new or startup biotechs should be focusing on, especially as they think about commercialization strategies and commercialization plans. For more information on PharmaTalk Radio podcast, you can visit theconferenceforum.org. Thank you so much.
Detect mice before they become a problem with SMART from Modern Pest Services. Our experts use SMART's 24/7 monitoring to prevent costly infestations. Call 1-800-323-7378 or visit modernpest.com/smart for a free quote.